Podcast, continuing our season previews as we're getting set for the regular season in 2016-17. I can't believe it's even close to here. I am your co-host, Andrew Reish, and I'm joined by Adam Murray.
Guten Tag.
Hello. always with that stuff. Is that another one of those things you picked up overseas?
I have not been to Germany yet. Germany is still on the list.
What excursions you went through this summer?
Somewhere during these previews, I will be in Ecuador going up some mountains.
No, any NBA players from Ecuador.
I do not. It neighbors Venezuela, so Grievous Vasquez,
yeah.
Okay, so we got, and then, no, that's the rest for this year.
Okay. Are you ready to continue our season previews?
Yep, we got through the garbage, and now let's go through teams and, put a little quick pre-note on this. The NBA has gotten a lot better. There used to be a lot of just, well, we know who the really bad teams are, and mm-hmm. we know who the really good teams are. Now we're getting, teams 25 and 24 aren't really that much different than teams 17 and 16. It's just one little bounce of the ball, and they could be up two or three tiers.
It's an interesting crop. The name of this crop that's going to be the last one we did was called Please Stop Believing, which to us are just like the last one we did last year was called No Chance in Hell. Like those were five teams that we just did not think any of them were going to make the playoffs. In fact, I'm pretty sure that the five teams that we previewed did not make the playoffs. Whereas this one is more interesting. But like you said, the teams that we did the rung above that last year, those were teams that we knew were pretty bad and didn't really have much hope. Whereas this year, there's some teams here where you're like, huh, like you kind of curl your eyebrow a little bit and you're like, something might happen here. This one is called ... And let me explain it. It's like when you're in that like boardroom at work and somebody has like an idea and it sounds like a terrible idea. And you're like, oh, nah, it's not a good idea. And then you kind of think about it again and you're like, but wait a minute. If this happens and this happens, like, so these are teams where on face value, you look at the names and the names of the teams. And when it comes to playoff potential and title contention potential, and you're just like, oh, nah. But then there's that little thing at the end where you're like, okay, there is something there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let's give them some examples.
You're ready to go, huh?
Let's get into it.
Now let's talk about some of the numbers of teams. We got six this time. We had five on the last one, so there's a little bit of fluctuation about how many teams we're actually going to have in the tiers. So, like for example, we're not going to have five, 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 and five. Sometimes we're going to have teams that are more because we feel like they're sort of fit that niche better. You know, in fact, there was one where we almost had seven in there. But we're going to go ahead and get started with this one. And this one, the first team, because we're doing it alphabetically based on the name of the city, will actually probably shock people, and that's the Charlotte Hornets. Now, I fought for them to try to go up the next tier, and you weren't having it.
I fought very hard to keep them where they are here.
Okay, what is your beef with the Charlotte Hornets?
They are not a good team. They made very bad decisions this year. Having let's give 4 years to Marvin Williams, who's already on the wrong side of everything.
Well, let's kind of flash back. Like they had a 48-34 season, their best season as a franchise, because even though they continue from the Charlotte Hornets, we're really starting from 2005 when they were the Bobcats as an expansion team. Kemba Walker, great year. Nicholas Batum worked out really well. Al Jefferson on the way out had he fit in at the end, was able to give him something. Courtney Lee in a trade really provided. Did not like what they got out of Frank Kaminsky, but he's a rookie that they like, or he was a rookie that they like. They went seven games with the Miami Heat and got absolutely decimated in Miami in that game seven. A lot of changes, though. What did you think of the changes that they made?
None of the changes were good. Again, Marvin Williams, I didn't like the deal they gave him. Bellinelli, I like that one, but where he's going to be buried under Kid Gilchrist and Batum. Neither of those are shooters, so you're going to rely on Kemba Walker to be your only scorer on the outside. Cody Zeller, people are still out on him, and his backup is Roy Hibbert, who is probably the...
He's the most outdated NBA big man, like, ever.
Yeah, him and Kaminsky are your backups to Marvin Williams and Cody Zeller, and this is the mm-hmm. team you're going to put on the court. So they have a lot of front court. And oh, we forgot Spencer Hawes is still on the team by default because of his contract.
Not only that, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who is like a small forward slash defensive two, he's back. I have a problem with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, not just because he's very, very young. A lot of people like his defensive efficiency, but he's 22 years old, which works in his favor. However, I just don't see the offensive potential for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. He only played in 7 games. He had the shoulder issues. I have a problem with how he fits with Nicholas Batum, who they had to re-sign to – well, it wasn't max money. They actually got him on a slight bit of a discount at $20.8 million the first year, going – and then it goes up from there with a player option in 2020. So, you know, Batum pretty much he did everything that he was asked in Charlotte. You know, but is he the best player or is Kemba Walker the best player?
It's Kemba Walker's team, and Batum, they had to give the money, but the only reason Batum thrived was because Kidd-Gilchrist was out for the year. So you got two players who are basically the same guy. Bellinelli, who is a system guy, and, you know, he didn't fit.
I thought Bellinelli was a terrible move, personally.
And let's not forget they gave $7 million a year to Jeremy Lamb, bidding against nobody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just their bench is very ugly.
Yeah, you lost Jeremy Lin and Courtney Lee. Courtney Lee was a shooter. He could play the two, but he could handle the ball a little bit in an emergency. Jeremy Lin, it was a bit of in the same way, but he was more of a point guard. You lost them both, and now you have to bring in Ramon Sessions. You have to bring in Brian Roberts, who I'm pretty sure both those guys had played for Charlotte in the past. So I don't know how they're going to fit on the second go-around as backups to Kemba Walker. So that kind of scares me. Your depth at the guard position is sort of lost.
Your depth everywhere is lost. Who is, you know, I don't even see a sixth man on that team.
Well, it would probably be Jeremy Lamb, but he had his issues with Steve Clifford at the end of the season. He didn't even get any playing time after he re-signed.
Yeah, he did good for a couple weeks and then disappeared. If Cody Zeller goes down, this team, it will be too high up in this tier, in my opinion.
Well, that means Kaminsky would start.
And your only backups are Hibbert and Christian Wood, who...
Yeah, and they would go into stretch mode if Kaminsky's the five, because you got all these three-point shooters on the court with Batum and Walker. Even Marvin Williams takes a lot more threes than he used to. I thought re-signing Marvin Williams to, you know, $12 million a year for the next 3 years, I actually didn't hate that as much as you did. You know, I thought it was actually a decent fit.
Okay, that's...
I'll go out on a limb.
You, again, I basically lobbied hard to keep them down here as my Charlotte Hornets opinion is very well known.
I just think people are going to be surprised listening to us talk about the Charlotte Hornets as a team that's probably not going to make the playoffs. But remember, they made the playoffs in 2014. They signed Lance Stephenson. Everyone's, you know, they changed their colors back to the Hornets, and everyone's like, "Oh, well, this is the beginning of the new phase of playoff years for Charlotte." And they had a miserably bad year. So, do you think they could try to continue that run, or do you think they're going to hit another snag like they did in 2014 when they signed Lance and things just went sideways?
That's the problem of having expectations is, oh, now we think we're a good team, and then you're going to realize having that depth is what got you sort of where you did, because can you be like, I see Ramon Sessions carrying me through a stretch of time where, you know, if Kemba Walker gets injured, you're relying on Brian Roberts and Ramon Sessions. Nobody is shooting on that team if Sessions is there.
They were third in three-pointers made and eighth in three-point percentage, but with Lee and Lin gone, that's going to definitely take a dip.
Yeah, and that's the problem is you're now trading offense for defense, and your Kaminsky can't play defense, so if he has to play extended time, your defense is now exposed because Marvin Williams can't. You know, if you have to play sort of small and Marvin is a four and Kaminsky's a five, well, everybody's just going to go dump it in.
What do you say about the Al Jefferson era in Charlotte? Did it work out?
Of course it did. He went there because they're the only, it was one of those situations where nobody else would pay him.
Yeah, he got the third. I think it was 3 for $30 million, which was actually a good deal for him at the time.
Well, 3 for $30 then is like 3 for $60 now.
Exactly. And the other thing that they're going to miss about Al Jefferson, even though he had personal problems with the marijuana, I think he got popped for marijuana. Am I correct?
Marijuana and alcohol.
Yeah, and he played in the playoffs. He played decently, but what they're going to miss for sure is that he was able to get to the free throw line. And that's something where they were seventh in the league in free throws made, and that's going to take a dip too. You know, a lot of the problem with the Hornets, and I do agree with you about this, is that everything points to a downward trajectory, at least for this season, just because of the moves that they made. They didn't really get that much better. In fact, pretty much in every position, they got worse, you know.
So, and that's why, you know, might be shocking, but they claim, oh, we're just as good. But to me, I just see massive downgrade after massive downgrade with this team.
Okay, so we're talking about 48-34 last year. I mean, we're in a range where you're probably at around like 35 to 40 win range. You know, so you kind of see the same thing.
Yep. In order to stay at the 48, you have to have Cody Zeller really needs to be a borderline all-star.
Okay.
It's just there's nobody else is scoring on that team.
Kemba Walker, all-star?
You say so. By now, yeah, why not? I'll give okay. in, dude.
It's like you're the nah and I'm the but. Like we're trying to find a compromise where you find like a negative and a positive at the same time. It seems like you're all out and I'm almost weirdly all in. Now let's talk about the Denver Nuggets as we go on to the Western Conference. What is the nah in the Denver Nuggets?
Oh, they got no talent really. Their top talent guy Gallinari most likely will be traded.
They've got young talent.
They're just the say. You know, they were last year we were talking about Utah and Minnesota being the young and Orlando being the young teams. All right, time to step up. This is, well, they're still another year away. You got, you know, Gary Harris, Moutier, Jokic, Nurkic, Malik Beasley, Will Barton, Jamal Murray, all super, Juancho Hernan Gomez, all young guys who need another year or two.
And so with Danilo Gallinari, you know, he's got that player option. He's probably going to opt out. Had a really, really good year. You've got Kenneth Faried still there, you know, signed through in 2019. Really good chance he might be gone anyway. Because do you think they might trade him down the road is really the question I'm asking with
his Faried. Contract is so good right now. Oh, he's overpaid at, you know, $12 million a year. He's, you know, he didn't take that leap into all-star territory, but he is still solid contributor who – if you look at his numbers, they haven't gone down year to year. It's just they haven't.
The energy level's not there anymore with him. It seems like he's kind of rested on his
laurels. I think that might just be on the team and, you know, sort of the turmoil. But, you know, Nurkic was injured last year and couldn't get on the court too much. But we all know what he can do. Jokic has, you know, sort of made Nurkic expendable because – yeah, and you know they both got Joffrey LaVerne off the team because there was no room for him. Yeah. You know, Darrell Arthur, as much signing's not that good, but you need a veteran presence. And
yeah, I questioned that signing too, re-signing Darrell Arthur. I would have just let him leave. You know,
and right, the X factor is Wilson Chandler, who was out last year with an injury. If he comes back to is, you know, borderline, he wasn't an all-star, but if he comes back to being good, that's, you know, beneficial for them.
Now, this team won 33. I mean, we were, you know, talking about how the Charlotte Hornets won 48 games and we're projecting them downward and it's going to shock people. But the Nuggets won 33 games. You know, are they? I mean, that's not terrible given what we thought the Nuggets were going to be. Like, they were 5-11 in the month of November, but they just kind of stayed with it after that. They never really like took too bad of a dip after that. You know?
Yeah, they were just the we don't have talent to make the playoffs, but we stay in games. And you know, that's why sometimes stats are too overrated because, you know, Moutier was apparently statistically the worst point guard of all time, right? And it's just like, well, yeah, the last person to be the worst, you know, point guard of all time was Austin Rivers. And
yeah, but was Emmanuel Moutier a bad player?
That's the thing. It's just like, well, there's nobody around him. And, well, you need to see. It's like, well, I see the talent. He just needs to work it out. The same thing with Russell was I see the talent. He's just making rookie mistakes. Mm-hmm. Whereas Austin Rivers, he just doesn't have
talent.
Well,
they're looking at the efficiency and saying, well, efficiency-wise, Emmanuel Moutier had, like, the worst rookie year ever. But here's the thing. Would they have been better if they had had the next guy after Moutier? The answer is probably not. What do they used to call it? What do they call that in baseball? War? Wins above replacement?
Yeah.
Like, what would have been – I mean, I don't know if Moutier – I don't think replacing Moutier with any point guard, like an Ish Smith, would have made him any better, you know? I think Moutier is a decent fit. This is one where the Nuggets actually – the pieces actually fit really well, to be honest with you. And they're all signed, most of them, through 2018, except for Gallinari, who's sort of the big carrot, dangling carrot out there.
This is like the Lego team right now. They have so many pieces. They could sort of build it however they want because Moutier and Cousin Jamal are perfect complementaries to each other. Both can play off the ball and point guard and just even rotate by possession or play even. You have Gary Harris, Will Barton. They're, you know, Malik Beasley is a shooter who...
You can move Harris if you want to play Murray at the two. You know, there's a lot of things you can do there. You like Juan Hernan Gomez from Spain?
I got into him in the Olympics. I was sort of down on him then watching him play. It's like, all right, I could see he'll be good.
Yeah, well, it was him and Willie. Willie plays for the Knicks, right?
Yes.
And then there's Juan. And I saw Juan a little bit in the summer league. Jamal Murray from Kentucky, I've seen him. He can play. I think he was actually a bit of a steal. I think they got him at number 8 or number 7.
Number 7.
Like, I think it was a steal. Will Barton, I really like him. 25 years old, almost won Sixth Man of the Year. He's got a super-duper cheap contract. It was one of the worst deals the Portland Trailblazers ever made, trading Will Barton with his expiring deal for Aaron Aflalo, along with a draft pick, which they turned, I think, into Juan Hernan Gomez. Just all bad. They also brought in they got another draft pick, I think, but I don't think that one's coming. Or no, they did. It's Juan Hernan Gomez.
Yeah, the Gomez, other one is Beasley, and
yeah,
Murray.
The other one is I'm thinking of Malik Beasley, who had the leg injury, so nobody has seen him play. But he played pretty well at Florida State. I'm not sure how good he's going to be, but they can take a flyer on him.
He's a shooter, and you know, he there's a role for him on this team, and there's a lot of young pieces to be excited about. So, and they're better than the garbage we had before, but they're not as good as they're not contenders.
Yeah, and it's not like they're going to miss DJ Augustin and Kostas Papanikolaou and guys like that. Like, it's not like they were exactly like setting the world on fire anyway. Wilson Chandler, like you said, is an automatic addition because he was out for the season with a hip injury. Defensively, they got to get better. 22nd points allowed, 26th in defensive efficiency. That has to start with Moutier as a defensively as a point guard. Has to get better. Three-pointers made. I don't know if that's really that important for the Nuggets. You know, Jamal Murray might be able to make some threes, kind of improve that stat a little bit. They do attack the basket a lot, which is sort of the byproduct of a young team. You're not relying on your jump shot. You know how to get to the rim, so you just continue to do it, so you draw fouls. But, you know, I do like what Mike Malone is doing here. You know, I don't think they need to change too much of what they're doing right now. I'm still interested in that Gallinari player option thing next summer. Well, that's going to be interesting because he is their leading scorer. If you lose him, then you might have to look into free agency. And remember, they almost got Dwayne Wade in free agency because they offered the most money, I believe. It was either them or Milwaukee.
They offered the most money, and you know, for him to even look at that team, that's a good sign because
that I agree with you. A lot of people were like, "That doesn't work," and I'm like, "Yeah, it does." Because if Gallinari leaves, Wade's your guy. You know, that actually makes sense, and he can build the younger guys up. You know.
Yep.
It actually would have been, if that move had been made, that would have probably been my favorite move of the whole offseason, to be totally honest with you. Let's go ahead and talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, another team that has a lot of really interesting parts. They're almost like Lego, only they have long, long Lego arms, like Go-Go Gadget arms. They got, like, crazy wingspans all over the place. Everybody's out of position. A lot of people were really, like, tickled by their potential when they made the playoffs in 2015, lost in six games to the Bulls in the first round, signed Greg Monroe. Everyone's thinking, oh, that's the missing piece. And then things just kind of went the wrong way for them.
You sign it, that's the missing piece. Up, that's the piece does not fit at all. And and this team is just riddled with question marks. Although Dellavedova was their main free agent sign. Very, very good pick. Mm-hmm. Jason Terry, very good veteran leadership pick.
Isn't he familiar? He's familiar with Kidd because they played together in Dallas when they won the championship. I just totally forgot about that. Yeah. I can't believe it. I was thinking about the Brooklyn days, and then I've just realized, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, he's a player, too. Mirza Teletovic, good, nice big man backup signing. I wasn't a fan of their big men sign. John Henson re-signing was sort of a question mark, and him and Plumlee I see as the exact same player.
So re-signing Miles Plumlee I thought was dumb because it straddled their cap. For good. It straddled their cap for good.
Our team is young. Let's just keep our entire team together. But it's just a weird. Antetokounmpo is the point guard. Dellavedova is now going to be the two guard. You have Chris Middleton.
Well, Giannis was a bit of an experiment, but it was an experiment that worked out really well for them, where he had like three triple doubles in the last month of the season. Do you think that continues with him as a point guard, or do you think they'll just settle him back to the three?
I think they're going to go all in on that.
Okay.
Because they don't really have much of another.
Then what do you do with Michael Carter Williams?
Well, Michael Carter Williams needs to do something because he hasn't done too well in Milwaukee.
He can't play the two because he can't shoot. And you bring in Matthew Dellavedova as your traditional point guard, and he played well in Australia in the Olympics. But I mean, do you like that fit with Dellavedova? I think it works.
I like the fit. Yeah, he's a great compliment to Giannis, and Chris Middleton's your three, so Carter Williams could back up multiple positions. He can't shoot, so offensively they're just anemic. But if you put him in Jason Terry, Jason Terry will just shoot anyways.
Was there anything the Bucks could have done better? Because we did this obviously with Netflix and chill, but is there anything they could have done better in the 2015-16 season to get out of where they were with the 33-49 record? Or it was just one of those things where Monroe didn't fit, everything else kind of fell from there, and there was nothing they could do because they couldn't move Monroe?
Basically, they're not like a Lego team. They're like the Japanese import Lego team, and the instructions are all in Japanese, so you're just sort of putting pieces together, seeing, can I build this to look like the picture? Like, Thon Maker is the ultimate boom or bust prospect, and because, he's playing high school in Canada. That's not exactly inspiring competition.
And he's originally from a foreign country, correct? That's why he was eligible as 19, because he was an international prospect.
Oh yeah,
a college player. If he played at an American high school, he would not have been eligible.
Well, this was a prep school he was at. So the Canadian prep school, came from Australia, originally from South Sudan. So he's traveled all over the place. And in the summer league, he looked really good, extremely raw, but good.
He's like Kenneth Faried. He reminds me a lot of a really raw Kenneth Faried, to me.
And it's just, Jabari Parker looking good. Mm-hmm. Him and Giannis, you have your core duo, and we could sort of start building around it. It's just,
I don't know if it was just me watching highlights, because Jabari Parker's a really, sneaky dark horse highlight guy. Like, he can really put it on people. And Giannis, it seemed like the moment he became the point guard, Jabari Parker kind of got going a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if it was because it moved Giannis out of the three. It let Jabari Parker kind of play more of that natural.
Kind of float around a little more.
Exactly. Exactly. Not bumping into each other as much. So, I mean, I really like them. We've already talked, I think we talked a little bit about this with the expansion draft episode, about the situation they're going to be running into with the contract extensions for Antetokounmpo and Parker down the road, and how moving Monroe and moving a couple of other pieces, the timing is just right where they're not going to be too far over the cap once they have to re-sign them. So they're good there. We've heard so many rumors about Chris Middleton being moved. I don't think he's going to get moved this year, but do you think there's a possibility?
He has value. It's just one of those, like, well, he's good, but he doesn't sort of fit, and he's good, but...
What do you think of the politics behind the new general manager, Justin Zanik? And then what it is that they kept the old general manager. I don't remember his name right now off the top of my head, but he is sticking. He's sticking around with the organization, but he's not the GM anymore. Like, because there was some rumors there that Jason Kidd and the general manager weren't, because the general manager was already there when Jason Kidd came in, because the owners wanted Jason Kidd. And do you think there's just some kind of weird vibe going on there?
No, there's nothing wrong with okay, now you're the guy, you've never been a head GM, but now you're the head GM, as opposed to okay, we'll hire you with, and you know, you'll apprentice for 2 years, so you'll know the system, as opposed to you come in, you don't know anybody, you have no loyalty to everybody, sort of like, this is the team you're gonna have, you know, for the next 5 years.
John Hammond is the name of the guy. He's the current general manager, but they have another general manager kind of in waiting, I guess, Justin Zanik. I hope I said his name right.
Justin
Zanik, yes.
It's so sort of unorthodox, but it's sort of, you could sort of see with, well, you have no experience, you've got the job, make him like an assistant GM for a while.
Yeah, no OJ Mayo, got banned. He was an unrestricted free agent anyway. Jared Bayless, who was sort of like their veteran guy on the backcourt, he went to the Sixers. Gravis Vasquez, I don't think he really did much for him anyway.
All their signings they weren't intending on keeping anyways. Yeah. It's just, again, another year of a lot of question marks, but at least we know they're not going to be good.
But I like Dellavedova. You like Mirza Toledovic getting moved there. Thonmaker's interesting. We there's a lot, you know, there's some nah in there because of the fact that they got Greg Monroe still, but there's a lot of but, like, there's a lot of okay, this could really work for them, you know, this is what you're talking about when you're talking about teams that are in the bot, like the second to bot last rung, where you're like, this is not a bad team at all, you know. Let's go ahead and move on with the Minnesota Timberwolves, because I was looking at the wrong sheet. This one is – now, some people would look at that record and say, why are the Minnesota Timberwolves this high? Because I believe – how many wins did they have? 23 or – 29, actually. They had 29 wins. First of all, were you surprised they had 29 wins?
Kind of, because
– Sam Mitchell was the coach?
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, obviously, you know, after the death of Flip Saunders, you know, with all that. You know, they were in flux really from the start after that happened. They bring in Tom Thibodeau to run the team, basically. He's also he's not the general manager per se, but I believe he's the team president.
Yeah, it's his team now. We've been saying for years, all right, this is the time to put everything together, and this is probably the best you're gonna get with this young team.
Well, I think the best is yet to come still. But I think for now, this is the beginning of.
No, I meant with this is has to be your team. This has to be your roster. You can't tinker with it anymore.
Oh, okay. I see what your point. Yes.
Yeah. As Orlando, well, let's just make another move. Phoenix, let's just make another move. This has to be your. We have our guys. I think they sort of went with that way by signing, you know, veterans Cole Aldrich, Jordan Hill, Brandon Rush. To sort of, you know, tutor these young guys, because they're not going to get a lot of minutes. This has to be, you know, Rubio done if Rubio gets traded. You know, Levine, Wiggins, Town, and Dang. It has to be, this has to be our team, our core. We can't move pieces anymore.
Is it inarguable now that Karl-Anthony Towns is the best player on the team, even as a rookie?
By far, and you know, you're already hearing the Wiggins bus talk, and well, it's like, well,
I don't think so about that.
He had such lofty expectations. I have seen a couple little. Well, he's not that guy. He's not the superstar we thought he was.
Well, no, but he might be a great number two. He might be a Pippen type of player.
But he was supposed to be the next Kobe. He was supposed to be, you know.
Athleticism. They fall in love with the athleticism.
He was a one and done, and outside of Anthony Towns, they all sort of.
It's like Josh Jackson at Kansas. Like, he's in the same position Wiggins was in. Like, Josh Jackson might not be a future NBA All Star, but guess what? He might be a really good player. It's just same thing as Andrew Wiggins. Some people just aren't wired that way, and I think that Karl-Anthony Towns is wired as a guy that will rip your heart out. He will continuously beat you on the boards, rebounding, blocking shots, stretching the defender. He's always looking a way to challenge. Wiggins is a guy that sort of roams. You know, he kind of picks his spots. You know, he does get to the free throw line a lot. Wiggins does, for sure.
They I don't think they have many first rounds coming, because I know they gave one for Adrian Payne, which was a big mistake.
Yes.
And, you know, Pekovic, I think this is the last year of his deal. He's gone.
He's got one after this year, but you can stretch him. Like, stretching him actually after 2017 makes sense.
Okay, so he's basically gone after this year. And depending upon what they do with Rubio and Dunn, everybody, you know, certain people here are absolutely in love with Dunn. But, again, he's a rookie.
Is that Augusto Rosero shots fired?
There's going to be a rookie wall he's going to hit. And Rubio, I don't know. He's sort of had unfair criticism, I think, his entire career.
Well, I had talked about it in another show about how he really got off to a blistering start, you know, when he came in 2012, and then he had the knee injury. That really slowed him down. His shooting is just never going to be there. He's never going to be more than 10 points a game type of guy. His assist and his steals rate is obviously very, very high. It's one of the best in the NBA. Defensively, as an individual one-on-one defender, I think he's a little overrated, but I do think he serves value. The thing is, for Chris Dunn, that's kind of his appeal, too, that he's like a defensive point guard. He's got the NBA moves in terms of his dribbling, his handle. His shot's a little bit broken, too. You know, so it's almost like you're getting another Ricky Rubio, you know, but just a little bit more athleticism, you know, or maybe even a lot more, depending on what you think of Rubio. And maybe the just ability to just that mystery factor of maybe Dunn can provide more because we haven't seen it yet. But I don't think they need to be really, really thrifty about just getting rid of Rubio just because you have Dunn now. If Dunn has like a good first month of the season, I don't think they need to overreact.
Oh, they're not going to. They've had so many young people. They know there's going to be ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. So you know, we know they're going to take another step forward. We know this isn't going to be the year. I don't think, day one, Thibodeau is going to – they're all going to be in shape. They're all going to be good. This is going to be sort of the precursor to next year. Watch out.
I agree. I think this is like Stan Van Gundy's first year in Detroit when he didn't make the playoffs for the first time as a head coach. But then the next year, they started to turn it around. And remember what turned that season around was that they stretched Josh Smith, because Smith didn't work chemistry-wise for that team. And even though they paid the Piper to do it, because they had to stretch him for so many years and the contract was so big, once they cut him, they started to get better. They still missed the playoffs that season, 2015, but the following season, you could see him turning a corner. I feel like the same way with the Timberwolves. I'm not saying there's somebody on that team that's messing up the chemistry and they have to cut him, just like Detroit did.
Too many bodies.
Yeah, you got it. Something's got to go. I mean, I don't know if it's Rubio. I don't know if it's stretching Pekovic. Maybe it's letting Gorgui Dieng leave in restricted free agency so that she can make some more room for another big, maybe sign another big, you know, something like that, you know. And I don't think those veteran signings, like Brandon Rush, might help him out at the small forward position the same way that Tayshaun Prince did.
Rush is just there to help Levine, Levine, and Chris Dunn. Same thing last year. They had, Tayshaun Prince and Andre Miller.
Yeah, Andre Miller, Damian Rudish.
You know, they had the old guys in to let's tutor the young guys. You know, Cole Aldrich, Jordan Hill, Jordan Hill's sort of the change of pace guy, but, you know, because Garnett, if he's still on the team, he's not going to play at all.
Yeah.
Cole Aldrich, he's just there to, okay, let's, you know, I've been here, I know how to do it. You guys, you know, Karl Towns and Dang, you know, you're young. Rush, okay, Wiggins, Levine, you know, listen to me. We can do it. Let's, you know.
Yeah.
Shabazz Muhammad, probably the odd man out.
Yeah, well, one of those guys between Jang or Muhammad is going to be gone because they'll probably be overpaid on an offer sheet that the Timberwolves are just not going to want to match, even though they have a lot of cap space. Maybe they just don't want to waste it. Maybe
they
really
don't want to waste it because they know this year's X factor comes down to Zach LaVine.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't do it at the two full time, then
yeah, and he's got to be a two. He can't be a one anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know? He has to be a two, and if he can't get it, and it's just, well, your raw talent still, well, this is year, you know, what, three or four?
This is his third year coming up, yes.
So third year, if you're still not getting it, well, now we need to might, you know, we need to, you know, there was no openings for Jokic. You've shown you have raw talent to do it. Can you put it together? If not, well,
can he be an efficient player is the biggest question for me with LaVine.
No, yeah, because if he you know, falters or goes down, there's no, again, we're talking Brandon Rush, and then you have to move Chris Dunn into the two.
Mm-hmm.
And you move Chris Dunn into the two, Tyus Jones is now your by default point guard backup, who you like still. And,
yeah,
you know, he won the summer league for Minnesota.
Well, the thing with Thibodeau that works for him is that he's – obviously, we know this from Chicago. We've talked about it so many times. He's a defensively-minded coach. That's his thing. The defensive efficiency for Minnesota was 27th, which is really, really bad, obviously. Rebounding is another one of those things that they've always – Thibodeau's teams have prided themselves on. They were 29th in rebounding at Minnesota. I don't think they're going to take a lot of threes because they're just allergic to it. But with Wiggins – I think that Thibodeau is going to challenge Wiggins as more of a defensive three. I feel like he's going to do the same with Chris Dunn and Ricky Rubio. He's just going to run by committee as defensive point guards who can make plays occasionally. And then Towns defensively is just he's already really good. You know, the rest of them, they just got to have to follow suit. And LaVine is the X factor. Defensively, can he pick things up? Can he become a more efficient player? Can he be more of an off-the-ball guard? You know, if he can't do any of those things, then that's going to really mess up their, like we just talked about, their chemistry. So there's a little bit of tinkering that they have to do here. It's not like a guarantee just because you got Tibbs in that things are just going to work out and be blessed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next team, my New Orleans Pelicans. I'm just depressed. You just start talking.
Well, the Pelicans have sort of gone the route of let's shore up our bench.
Mm-hmm.
We know we can't hit home runs, so let's just hit a couple singles, get some guys on base. We're not, you know, because we got Tyreke Evans and Drew Holiday last year, their deal, so we can't sign anybody because those guys are still on.
Not just that. Tyreke Evans is not going to be able to start the season because he's got a chronic knee problem.
Tyreke Evans has Tyreke Evans syndrome.
And then Drew Holiday's wife, pregnant wife, an ex-athlete, has a brain tumor, which is terrible. But Drew Holiday will miss the start of the season. That's a guarantee.
As well he should. He's going to, mm-hmm. you know.
Of course. Absolutely. That's no criticism of that. But he is in the last year of his contract just like Tyreke. So now you make these kind of smaller deals because you didn't want to really overspend like the Houston did with the two ex-Pelicans, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. So they went smaller deals, used the mid-level exception on some of them. You got Solomon Hill that's coming in, Etuan Moore, because you not only that, Adam, I think a big thing is that they just wanted guys that didn't have injury history. They wanted guys that they could literally depend on every day.
I mean, hell, last year, the first game, they had to sign Nate Robinson and then cut him immediately because they were too injured on day one. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the same thing, Tyreke is out, so let's get Lance Stephenson in cheap. Terrence Jones, I don't know whether he got railroaded in Houston or what really happened.
He did have an injury history there, and he basically fell behind Capella, and he couldn't get the minutes back.
So, you know, they got him nice and on a cheap veteran minimum deal. You have your developmental big in Sheik Diallo, who's raw but shows something. The one thing I sort of worry about is
Omer Sheik.
Omer Sheik is still on the roster, and maybe, you know, he can be healthy and find, you know, maybe he could find something.
He was already a low-level center when he signed the deal. Now he's like almost.
Well, when he signed the deal, I was like, well, that's a terrible deal. But he was good, and I thought it was good, and they were playing well together. Mm-hmm. It's just like he lost his way and just became one of those up.
But you had a point you wanted to make, though.
Oh, yes. I'm worried about Buddy Hield.
You didn't like what you saw out of Buddy Hield, like with the...
No, I don't give any stock into Summer League where Yijin Leon and Nicholas Skidishvili were the MVPs of it. And, you know, that it puts a little... It's just, I think he might, you know, they don't want to put too much on him. Because watching Summer League, it looked like he's like, this is my team. I need to do everything. I need to be, you know, I need to make every shot. I need to do every play. I need to, you know, I need to be. It's like Oklahoma, where it literally was him. In the NBA, that doesn't work. So I don't want to say we should temper our expectations for Hield. It's just hopefully he doesn't expect too much of himself. Hopefully the Pelicans don't expect too much out of him. And, you know, it's okay to be like, okay, you could come off the bench for a bit, learn.
Well, he's going to have to play the two unless, because this is the big but for the Pelicans, because it's a... You know, it was a late signing, obviously, but they got Lance Stephenson because of the fact that Holiday's going to be out, Evans is going to be out. They needed a ball handling guard. Maybe they didn't rely on Etuan Moore and Langston Galloway as starters, or they didn't envision them as starters. They want them coming off the bench, so they bring in Lance Stephenson. Lance, obviously, I love Lance, but I know he's got a history of being a malcontent and not delivering when he's asked to, or not doing what he's told.
Well, he wasn't terrible in Memphis.
Well, no, he was a trooper there. He did what he had to with that injury riddled roster. But I'm talking about in LA where it didn't work, and then
that's LA. And it's just sort of the this is your, you know, this is your chance to do it. This is your chance. If you do well, you could be playing, you know,
the other thing that the Pelicans lacked was talent, and Lance Stephenson has talent. You know, that's
The thing is, you know, the Pelicans are, I don't want to say a cautionary tale. They're a tale of going all in, which, you know, they went all in at the same time. Let's get, you
it
know,
was 2013. Yeah, they signed Reek. They signed Drew Holiday. A year later, they gave up a draft pick for Omer Sheik, and it was all super.
The year before that, didn't they match Eric Gordon the year before
They signed Rhino, and they matched Eric Gordon's contract, offer sheet from Phoenix.
So they went all in, and you see like a lot of these teams like, oh, yeah, they gave, you know, $70 million to Alan Crabb, and then Josh Richardson or Tyler Johnson got paid, and then all these like, well, they're 4 years out, and then we're going to – the same thing happened to Drew Holiday trading for Holiday, and then
it's
signing.
Doing
Tyreek.
The slow build after they already tried the big build, you know.
They tried to sort of they went all in. They put all their eggs in one basket, and then the basket just fell over. So it's one of these. Like I said, maybe don't try to rush Buddy Hield in.
Who gets more playing time, Etuan Moore or Langston Galloway?
Oh, Etuan Moore, because Etuan could play the one. Langston Galloway is...
Solomon Hill is going to get at least like 27 minutes a game. He's going to be one of their most reliable players, to be honest. I'm not saying he's a great player, you know, because he's more one of those sabermetrics-y type of guys.
He's sabermetrics-y, and then also you can play him at the four if you want to sort of go a little smaller, and and you could, you know... have, you know, Terrence Jones the five, Solomon the four,
and remember Bryce John Jones was shot and killed, so now you're missing a point guard there, so you're really, really bare. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if once again we had to pick up a couple of
points. You got Tim Frazier.
Well, they actually signed him. This wasn't one of those training camp roster guys. They actually went out to get
him. They signed him, and he's, you know, third string guy, but believe
you know
Penn
him
State.
From the Boston days. Yeah. He played for the Celtics for
Nothing. You know, he's just a third end of the bench guy, and he's somebody as opposed to signing a 10-day contract. So I think this is more the we need players who can play for the season. So Solomon Hill and Moore, and yeah, they were overpaid, but you need players who can actually play as opposed to, well, we got him for a week or two.
And the big but here is obviously, along with Lance Stephenson, just because of his pure talent as a guard. The biggest but here is obviously the one that we haven't talked about, Anthony Davis. He had the 60-point game, I believe, against the Detroit Pistons. So 60 points, 20 rebounds, something like that. Just an incredible performance, one of the best they've had in the last couple of decades in a regular season game. What is the peak for Anthony Davis? Could he be like an MVP candidate if the New Orleans just takes off this season or maybe the season after that?
He could be, or he could also be if Erdy peaked already if, you know, his little minor surgery doesn't
want to. At 23 years old? He peaked at 22 years old.
Well, we're giving him a super max deal, and just I'm saying he's at that level. He's okay. You know, you're saying MVP level. Like, well, he's, you know, all star, borderline all star. Well, is he going to be one of those guys who will just sort of go back to that borderline all star level? And well, he has no talent around him, or is he going to be an MVP? That's what I meant by peaked, as in his trajectory went so high, sort of like Tyreek Evans. He was like, oh, rookie year, and then just, well, I'm going to plateau.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is that this is the year that the max contract that he re-signed last summer kicks in. But that also means you're counting the years down, because that's what small market teams do. I mean, even with Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City, you know, it's a little bit, you got that little doom and gloomy type of tone to it where you're looking at how many years you have left on a contract before a player can opt out. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, we've got this many years to impress this player or get him in the fold and convince him that he can compete here. Because by the time we get to the end of that contract, we don't want him to leave us. You know,
but no, I was saying, you know, from an MVP year, because last year, I don't want to say he regressed due to his injury, because he was injured, obviously, but what if he just stays at that level where he was injured? And, you know, it's just they're little nagging injuries that will keep you at 90% your career.
Yeah, and Alvin Gentry, you know, they wanted to score a lot of points, and they did, but their defense was so bad. And you've got Anthony Davis, one of the best shot blockers in the league, and they were 23rd in blocks. They were 21st in rebounds. It was just the style of the team was all over the place. I'm not sure if Gentry's even a good fit. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think hiring Danny Ferry was just a nice little – clandestine way of moving Dell Demps out of there so that when they fire him, they can just promote Ferry because he's already familiar with the organization.
That's sort of we got lucky. We got a good GM. And
yeah, but if you want to really, like, well, here's the thing. Say Buddy Hield doesn't work out. You can throw that back to Dell Demps. But if it does work out, they're saying, oh, Danny Ferry's a genius. He saw something that Dell Demps didn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the blame can be passed. That's why I was talking about the controversy with Milwaukee with the John Hammond and the new GM in waiting, is that when you can pass the blame wherever you want because nobody knows the inner workings of the team except for the team itself. You know, nobody's going to go out there and say, yeah, I picked that player and he sucks now. You know,
and even so, when it comes down to the court of public opinion, they don't care.
Yeah.
You don't care who was there.
They'll just go. Like, it's like, you know, we're Saints fans. It's the same thing like Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton. Like, oh, well, that was a Payton decision. Payton doesn't know how to pick talent. And, you know, if it works out, oh, Mickey Loomis is a genius. You know, like it always gets mixed up. That's why sometimes having something like Tom Thibodeau and Stan Van Gundy is great, because you know who decided to cut Josh Smith? Stan Van Gundy did, you know. So if you want to blame somebody, blame him.
Yeah, but at the same time, on the flip side, you have Doc Rivers, who you know, he's making all the decisions. Like, well, maybe you should have somebody with you. And
great, very good coach, bad GM. You know, and it just happens sometimes. Okay, let's talk about the Phoenix Suns. This is going to be the last team on our NAB. But how many NAS do you see here with the Phoenix Suns?
All of them. They are the definition of just an imploding team. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, we need to trade our core away. The owner is going to throw players under the bus. We're not going to play for our coach. Our new coach is there by default. We made these trades, but we're going to draft the exact same player.
Mm-hmm. It was a little messy there after the Bledsoe injury with the knee, because Bledsoe was so important in that team after they had traded Dragic and Isaiah Thomas, which is now becoming like one of the more infamous trading days ever when they traded Dragic to the Heat and Thomas to the Celtics. It immediately made the Heat and the Celtics better, and it immediately took the Suns out of Western Conference playoff contention, like literally in one day. You know, but they just decided that it wasn't going to work for them anymore with that three guard lineup. Nobody could decide who was the alpha dog. And so you bring in Brandon Knight, you keep Eric Bledsoe because you re-signed him to that contract. And when Bledsoe went down, you know, and then Knight struggled, and then he got hurt. He only played 52 games. Then things really went sideways. Jeff Hornacek, the head coach, was fired. Markieff Morris, we already heard that story. After, before he was traded to Washington, he had had all kinds of problems with the Suns. It was almost a good riddance situation. They were trying to trade him pennies on. Well, you know, I take that back, because didn't they get a first-round pick out of it? They traded Markieff for a first round pick that was protected in the bottom 10, like after out of the top 9, but because it went into the top 9, it fell out of the top 9, so the Suns got the pick from the Wizards. And I think they picked who did they pick with that one? Marquise Chris or
no, cuz that was part of the then they, you know, they traded with the Kings, and that was mm-hmm. the Kings trade. I was just
yeah, bad. I can't. I'm having trouble remembering exactly how that worked. But they
maybe they had the 13th pick, and they traded that 13th for the 9th.
Yeah, they had a lot of moves going on there.
But the thing is, with Phoenix, as you just said it, they're doomed to repeat their own history because they didn't learn. You have Bledsoe and Dragic and Thomas, who can't play together, so okay, let's get rid of Dragic, and then we get Brandon Knight, who's the exact same player as Bledsoe, which was the issue before. Well, Isaiah Thomas, well, let's draft Tyler Ulis in the second round. Devin Booker, he's the only thing that, you know, that was, well, we could play Knight and
how
Bledsoe
many more
together.
Kentucky guards can be on this team?
I was just surprised they didn't draft Jamal Murray.
It's the Kentucky Suns. Well, if they drafted Jamal Murray instead of Dragan Bender, I probably would have applauded him, to be totally honest with you. My fanboyism would have just been totally thrown out of the window. Alex Len, this is a big year for him. I mean, Tyson Chandler is there, but he still averages 8.7 rebounds, but he is way, I mean, that was one of the worser contracts that was signed last summer. You hated it. I still don't like it. Len has got to step up here and become the starting center. Do you think he can do it?
Oh, he's a starting center by default.
But he's going into restricted free agency next year. This is
yeah, but he's also battled injuries, and that sort of takes him out. But when he's on the court, he's decent.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got to be better than decent now. He's got to be good in the Western Conference as a big man. You know.
And the problem is, you draft Chris and Bender, who, you know,
they're
people
not ready.
Like,
neither of
people
them
like one or the other. Neither are ready. But one of them has to be a starter, because you can't play Len and Chandler together.
Well, I think maybe Jared Dudley, and you can play small, you know?
Then how small are you going to have to play? Booker's the 3, and you got Bledsoe, Knight, Booker, Dudley, and Len? That's just, again, you learn nothing from your previous mistakes, and then you blew it up, and then you do the exact same thing. And, you know, I was going to say, Booker's emergence has been good, and well, now you have your starting
Booker
two guy.
Booker has a big enough. This is where Booker surprised me. He's got a big enough, strong enough body to where he can handle playing the 3 occasionally on defense. He can't play it for 40 minutes, but he's so good that once he goes out and he starts playing that shooting guard, off guard role as a, you know, as a corner 3 guy, then he turns into a weapon, you know. But he's tall enough and he's strong enough that defensively he doesn't get totally destroyed, you know?
You had both Morris twins, you know, one, it was like, oh, they should probably upgrade one, move one to the bench. And then you dump out of that, now you have Jared Dudley and one of the rookies who aren't ready.
Yeah, I didn't really care for the Dudley move. Like, he got a lot of play from free agency because he was envisioned as like a 3-and-D guy. But I remember him like playing like absolute garbage in Washington. You know what I'm saying? He's more of like a team guy, more of like a locker room leader type who can kind
and
of,
this team needs one. So
it helps. They also brought in another old Suns favorite, Leandro Barbosa. He's 33 years old, had a couple of nice years with the Golden State Warriors. But then again, the Warriors, everything came up Millhouse for the Golden State Warriors. So what happens now with Barbosa now that he's on another bad team?
Well, he doesn't have much left anyways.
But can he provide, though, as kind of like the spark plug guard?
I don't think he has that in anymore. I think it's just more of a 15-minute guy, if that.
Is P.J. Tucker's starting days over?
Yeah.
But who's going to take that spot at the 3? Is it, it would it, I mean
Dudley.
Dudley, you'd think for good with taking over.
Dudley, and you, I guess they can hope TJ Warren turns it on because they're still high on him.
Yeah, they got another year. Compared to Len and Good and Archie Goodwin, they got another year, an extra year on TJ Warren. But, you know, he's got to do something. He did average 11 points a game. He didn't play a lot of games, but he can score. That's one thing he can do. He can score. A lot of other guys they brought in, Alan Williams, John Jenkins. We talked about Euless and Chris and Bender. It's just a very miscellaneous type of team once you get past Booker. You know, this was a team I really would have considered at the bottom spot, to be honest with you, looking back on it.
So, okay, let's rank them then.
Okay, so you're ready here. First of all, let's just finish up with the Suns. 23 wins. Do you see them going more than that? Or less.
Maybe by a win or two.
they're about 25. Where 25.
Yeah, they're about a 25 win team.
Okay, so let's just go ahead and get with the rankings here, and this is going to be going from 25 to 21, or is it 25 to 20? Because it's six teams, right?
Yes.
Okay. My math is bad now. Go ahead and give me the – let's because there's 16s, it makes it a little harder. Give me your bottom one, number 25.
Well, I would say Phoenix.
You would say the Suns?
I could also be talked into Denver just because of their youth.
I would say the Suns too. I would agree with that. Number 24 for you.
Denver? Just too young.
I would agree with that with the Nuggets. Number 23.
Milwaukee would be just above them.
23, I actually have the Timberwolves, and the Bucks would be above the Timberwolves. I just think the Bucks have a little bit more. You know, right now they do. Whereas Timberwolves have a lot of talent. But, you know.
Okay, we're just swapping that then. That's fine.
Yeah, and then we're missing here. We got New Orleans here. Is it the AD factor here?
The AD factor. I have him because all these other teams we've mentioned, they're too young.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans is not a young team.
There's a little bit of urgency in New Orleans, even though they had to rebuild a little bit. You know, but I worry so much about just the lack of talent after Anthony Davis.
I mean, Minnesota and Milwaukee should leapfrog New Orleans easily in the season, but right now, on paper, mm-hmm. I would take an Anthony Davis team over a Minnesota team with a new coach who has a completely different system than they're used to, mm-hmm. and then Milwaukee, who has 25 potential starting lineups.
Yeah, interestingly, of all the six teams we did in this section, only one has a new coach, and that's Thibodeau. And that was a team that probably had a win total that's kind of warranted them in the please stop believing bracket, but we kind of raised them up here. And then for the 20th spot, we both have the Hornets because they were a playoff team. I mean, they have to be the best of that one.
Oh, yeah, all because they're in this tier. Mm-hmm. Well, they're in here because, let's see, who would probably be the next tier up? Just, you have the Washingtons of the world, you have the Dallases, the Detroits, the...
Dallas is debatable because they had another... We'll talk about that in another...
But I'm saying, where would they fall? Could they beat a Detroits or a Miami's? No, Miami's still better than Charlotte's. Okay, then. Mm-hmm. You're the highest of that tier. You're still in the tier, but they're just
knocking on the door. So, for our debate, for our question on each episode of which team would be able to rise from this one to the next set, like upwards, you'd say it would be Charlotte. Would it be New Orleans? Would it be Minnesota?
It would be Charlotte. I think Minnesota, there's too many teams in the West.
I think it's Charlotte and Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee could actually leapfrog Charlotte if things go right. But you'd have to move Monroe. It's a big if, though.
And they could. You have teams who are now look at the way the certain teams are building. Orlando and Sacramento are building for. All right, you can shoot out, but we're just going to play. We're just going to be a defensive team. Monroe is great for a defensive team. He's just not good for an offensive. So if you know he becomes like this Ibaka type player.
Yeah.
Bam.
And which know. And which team would fall could fall downwards into the please stop believing, Brian?
Phoenix.
I'd also throw in New Orleans. Like I think it could go really bad for New Orleans if they have a bad month of November.
New Orleans, I think I sort of ranked a little generously just for you, but
well, thanks a lot. And now I have to bring them down.
I mean, they've gotten as far as they had, and they have never had a complete roster in the past 3 years.
Well, here's the thing. They never did have a complete roster because now those guys, their contracts are up. You know, so now you never really got what you needed out of Eric Gordon. I will say for Ryan Anderson, they got the most out of what they could with Ryan Anderson. They did what they could. Eric Gordon, whatever, good riddance. Tyreek Evans, absolutely not. They never got what they could out of Tyreek Evans. And Drew Holiday Drew Holiday's injury case was so bad that they actually tried to sue the Sixers for withholding medical records. That's how bad it was. You know, but I really feel terrible about his personal situation. You know.
Yeah. So it's just injuries took out the Pelicans, but it just. Bad decisions are taking down Phoenix, and let's do the same thing. And I think just who's their GM, McDonough?
Who's that? Ryan McDonough, Sean McDonough's brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just we overachieved with this formula. Then the formula blew up. Well, let's just do the exact same formula again. It's no, you need to change it up. And your pieces. Well, we got Chris. Well, he's not close to being ready. We got Bender. Oh, you're gonna play him with Chris and what? Alex
There's a
Len?
Lot of question marks in Phoenix. I mean, these teams do, but they do for sure.
Earl Watson's our coach because he was the only one we didn't fire last year because we did everything we could.
That was one of those like. Typical, like, the players trust him the most type of hirings. You know,
it's just a default thing. So, but that, like I said, this, as opposed to other years, this group isn't that bad. It's
I mean, like, Minnesota, Milwaukee, even New Orleans because of Anthony Davis. These are even the Hornets because they were a playoff team. These are good teams. These are teams that could beat, like, a championship team in a regular season game if they're really, really motivated. You know what I'm saying? Like, these bottom teams that we talked about before, Orlando, Brooklyn, Los Angeles, these teams are going to get railroaded against good teams. These teams would put up a good fight most of the time. So,
there we go.
But that's going to be wrapping up this one. You're kind of getting set for the next one? Because now we're getting to pretty decent teams.
Now we're getting to teams that are on the bubble of playoffs. And
I mean, we're almost – I mean, can you believe we're already shot out of the bottom pit of the of the armpit of the NBA with these teams?
I mean, as much as I like the bad teams because they're the teams that have the most potential and, oh, look at that guy. He's – he
can
developing. He could do something. And then it's just like I can only – it's the same teams every year we've been doing. So now it's just the way this year was being so crazy. Now we have teams in the middle who changed up a lot.
Are you saying you're tired of doing the show? You're tired of doing these
I'm saying I'm tired of talking to 76ers and Lakers.
Okay, but on behalf of Adam Maria, this is Adrian.